Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Moulin Rouge.
Where's all my soul sisters? Let me hear your flow, sisters.
Hey, sister, go, sister, soul, sister, flow, sister.
Theater. To be or not to be. Theater, theater. The play's the thing.
Well, hi.
Hi. How are you?
Oh,
Bailey
I'm
got
fine.
All quiet.
I'm a little sad.
That's what you
said
about, bro.
Because we talked about bullies before we hit record.
Yeah, because we were talking about bullies. I don't want to talk about bullies. I don't want to talk about them.
What are you crying? You crying now? Huh?
Yeah.
You cry about
wow.
It?
Oh,
wow.
You're my first bully.
Yeah.
Hurting people hurt people.
Hurting people hurt people. You know, I think there's a lot of people in theater that are likely or were likely, quote unquote, bullied throughout their life. And I think a lot of people find a non-bullying home in theater in a lot of circumstances, you know? But I also think once you get into, like, the real professional side of theater, you kind of go back to bullying again. getting bullied again by the industry.
By the actual industry
and everyone around you. Yeah. A few days ago was World Theater Day.
Yeah.
Woot.
Woot.
Well, not now. Now that this is coming out, it won't have been a few days ago. It would have been a week ago.
Right.
But when we're recording, it was 2 days ago.
There is a cat being tortured.
There's a cat.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's my
it's
old
okay.
blind cat.
They won't hear it on the recording.
So oh, okay.
Yeah, it just sounds like you saying that randomly as a non sequitur, but it's okay.
You need
to PA. Scott?
She's not our PA. You need to start sedating her before we start recording.
Oh, she has so little joy left in her life right now.
So why does that got
to
ruin my
day?
We're
not here to talk about Cats the Musical.
Welcome to CatCast.
What'd y'all do for World Theater Day? We released an episode of the pod.
Why haven't you guys listened to it yet, huh? What's going
we
on?
We probably have. Let's not alienate our listeners just yet.
But I wanna. We're talking about bullying.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, we... Okay, welcome to Theater Theater. I don't know. I don't even know where to go with that.
Yeah,
welcome to Theater Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Burcham.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
And each week we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses. And this is part three. This is number three of a very exciting mini-series, original movie musicals. We started with the Whizcast of Pods.
Mm-hmm. Something right. like that. Sure.
And then we did Lab Podrenth.
That was good.
Yeah, Lab.
That's a good one.
And this week we're doing
Moulin Pod. Damn, I wanted it to be
Moupod Rouge! Exclamation point.
Moupod Rouge.
I'll find one. We'll figure it out. And then next week we're covering Rocketman. But we're here. We're back and we're joined by the incredible, the incomparable, the beautiful,
enigmatic. Yeah.
Sexy.
Hold on, I gotta take a
kind.
Tums.
acidic.
Yeah. I agree. I concur with that.
Charming.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's Pam. It's P.
It's Pam.
Pam.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back.
Of course.
Oh,
always.
Thanks for being
I
back.
Guess I didn't blow it in Labyrinth.
I mean,
No, hardly.
You did a great job.
Yeah.
Pam, this week we're doing your pick.
Yeah.
We're doing your pick. You chose
Drop Dead Fred?
Yes.
Drop so... Dead Fred. Nice.
You love that movie. It's a good movie.
I really do. I really do.
It's a good movie. I just saw it a little too late in life. I feel like I would like it more if it was a if I had seen it younger.
Sure.
But I do love that movie. Should we just talk about Drop Dead Fred?
Anyway? Yeah, let's just How would you make Drop Dead Fred a musical? Well.
Pam come to this Hollywood Fringe because
that's right.
Pam, why did you choose it?
I chose it because I was obsessed with this movie when it came out, and I saw it maybe 6 times in the movie theater and knew all the songs, and I brought my tape recorder with me to the theater before the soundtrack came out and tape recorded the songs from the screen.
A pirate.
Yeah, love it. Love, love, love. And honestly, like, I don't love it as much now, but I do. It has a special place in my heart, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Okay. Sure. Yeah. What are y'all's relationship with this film?
I loved The R&J from 1996, and this one, I don't think I saw this in theaters. I got the soundtrack first. I had a boyfriend in high school that put some of the songs on a mix CD. Mm-hmm. So I really love those. And then I saw the movie quite a bit after the fact, but I've seen it several times now and I really enjoy it as well. Did not see the live version that was in LA a couple months ago, which I'm assuming we will talk about. And I can't wait to hear y'all's perspective on that.
Scott?
Yeah, I saw it in the theater when it came out. I saw it at Man's Chinese Theater, as a matter of fact.
Hey.
And had a blast. Like, I enjoyed Romeo and Juliet, although I've grown to love it more as time has gone on. And I don't know if I've loved Moulin Rouge more, but every time, even if it was, if it's been on TV and I've just sort of gone past it, I always stop. No matter where it's at, and kind of, I just really enjoy it. I think it's really great filmmaking. I think it's really cool storytelling, some fantastic design, and yeah, so I've always dug it, and you know, I sort of check it out once a year, I guess, or so.
To your point, Scott, it's exceedingly watchable.
Yeah.
For how bombastic and earnest and silly it is, it's still so watchable and accessible.
He hits all of the highs and all of the lows really,
I think,
really
those are
well.
His two best, R&J and this. I just agreed. Think, yeah, I think they're his best.
Without question. Without question. We'll get into all those others later. But
yeah, I really like Strictly Ballroom, just as a
piece. Strictly Ballroom, yeah. But that's kind of an asterisk, like
Strictly Snooze Fest. Oh my gosh. I thought one person would laugh. Never mind, I take it back.
Harsh. Well, yeah, I mean, my relationship with it is that I saw it maybe a year or two after it came out. I definitely didn't see it in theaters, but I saw it a year or two after at a party. I was invited to a friend of mine's birthday party where we watched it. And I remember having some, you know, some pubescent feelings.
I was
like, whoa, this is a lot. Like, I just hadn't really been introduced to that much, like, sexy, like, just kind of being thrown at me so hardcore. I had seen Titanic, I had seen nudity, but this is bombastic sex appeal here. So it was a huge awakening for me on a lot of fronts. But then it took... Do you hear my baby?
Yeah.
Do you hear baby?
No, that's just a random segue. No one will hear your baby.
No, they will this time. Not a non-sequitur. But, so I like it. I love the film. It's 2001. It came out pre-9/11. It was May 16, a little earlier.
Days.
Yeah. But Baz Luhrmann writes, produced, directs it, co-wrote it with Craig Pearce, who wrote all of his other movies with him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
He co-wrote Elvis. He co-wrote Strictly Ballroom. He co-wrote Romeo and Juliet, all these things. And, it, you know, they're all good scripts, I would say, for the most part. They're all a little silly and earnest. Mm-hmm. I'd say the worst of those scripts is Gatsby.
Yeah.
Maybe Elvis.
Yeah. I just hated Elvis.
Had a lot of editing issues that kind of screwed up that movie, I think.
Well, yeah. My take on Elvis. The target was, yeah.
My take on Elvis is that, and I think I've said this on the pod, Baz thinks that's what we want. Because Moulin Rouge does it so successfully, and Romeo and Juliet actually does too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there's like a rawness to both of them that are like it's so of the time, and they're kind of, it's kind of like when you watch 28 Days Later and it looks like it was shot on like the shittiest camera ever.
Yeah.
But it works for it. It's like the same thing. It's like, it's the best of Hollywood's abilities at the time, but like it looks shitty now, and I kind of like that. And with Gatsby and with,
did you say Australia?
Well, Australia, yeah, I kind of act like
Australia's
that. Australia's bad. Australia's straight up a bad film. I hate that movie.
And I hated Elvis, so good. It felt like a 2.5 hour long movie preview.
Yeah, Elvis is bad. But so we can talk Lerman for a second. So this is the third of his
What do they call trilogy. It? The Red Curtain.
The Red Curtain trilogy.
Yes. Oh, okay.
So it starts with Strictly Ballroom in 92, Romeo and Juliet in 96, and then he does this in 2001. And this was sort of his all three are sort of his love letter to the theater. He's a big opera director.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of his whole thing.
The dramatics are very palpable in his
work. Oh, for sure. And so to go for Shakespeare and to go for, you know, big French cabaret and, you know, and ballroom, these are very operatic ideas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll get into all this later. We'll get into the specifics of the film. I want to know what it's about.
Do you?
CJ.
Yeah.
CJ's breakdown.
Picture it, Paris, 1899. Christian, an English writer, has come to live that sweet, sweet, illicit bohemian life, eventually falls in with a group of theater weirdos, and finds himself at the Moulin Rouge, attempting to sell a script. He falls for the beloved and popular Satine, who reciprocates, but is essentially promised to a really gross duke. A dangerous love triangle ensues, but is stopped short by the sumption.
By the sumption.
Yeah, and they actually don't ever say tuberculosis in the film, we realized while we were watching the other night. They never actually say it. You kind of just assume.
She's just dying.
Yeah. Listen, she's we Googled dying. It. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Well, no, if Google absolutely. Says it.
The yeah. internet never lies.
You're right.
It's always accurate. That's dead on. It's such a simple thing. It's a simple, simple story that he augments in a really clever way. We were talking about it while we were watching it, sans Pam, which doesn't seem right, but we did. And but I think that the brilliant stroke was the casting, particularly the two of them, and then surrounding them with crazy character actors, all who were theater-based people.
Yeah.
You know, you have two movie stars who can carry a tune, but mm-hmm. who are actors and movie stars, and it makes everything work that nobody's a singer in a Broadway sense, at least. And then just makes everything pop. Like Jim Broadbent. Why didn't he get an Oscar nom for that? That's dumbfounding.
Maybe because he doesn't sing. He's not the one singing. So that might be why. Because they've done that before where like someone is incredible in something, but they didn't sing, so they don't get the nom. And you're just like, okay.
I know he can sing, right?
Broadbent? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not what they needed him to do, apparently. Yeah. There's an opera singer singing.
But do you guys agree with the theory that Nicole won for the others because she didn't win for Moulin Rouge? She was nominated.
I don't know.
She won for The Hours, not The Others. The Others is a really phenomenal
I like both of those.
She didn't win for The Others?
The Others is a horror film.
Yeah.
Hours is what she won for.
Oh, okay. I thought she won for the We've Been Dead the Whole Time movie.
No, that is a good movie. That's a really good flick. But no, she won for The Hours, a year or two later? Like,
let's
the
be
next
clear,
year.
The nose won for The Hours.
You're right.
The nose won.
The suicide scene is what won her that. No, she truly... spoiler for The Hours.
And The Others.
And The Others, you're right. But I think it's less of like a, oh man, we didn't give it to her last year, we should give it to her this year, and more of a career Oscar. It's sort of them being like, you've done a lot of great things here, let's give it to you. Which also, The Hours, it is a phenomenal performance. There is that. The nose. We should talk Ewan and Kidman for a second, but I want to go back to something that Scott said real quick because I know I'll forget. We were talking about opera, and Scott, you were talking about how simple this plot is.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on a bunch of stuff.
Actually. Yes. I read a little bit about.
It's inspired by Puccini's La Boheme, which is what Rent is directly.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Made off of, yeah. And then it's also inspired by Orpheus and Eurydice story.
That
which
I didn't know.
And if you think about it, it absolutely is. So he's a writer.
Yeah.
He goes down into the quote unquote like underworld of courtesans and cabaret and finds this woman who he loves. And then at the end, doesn't
back.
Get to be with her. And she's under contract with some devilish Duke man. You know, I mean, it's literally the same thing. You know, and then obviously Hades Town is the musical version of that. But he just wanted to do his epic homage to theater. And he had just done Midsummer Night's Dream. Was inspired by Bollywood because he had seen some Bollywood film that he was like, oh, this rules. So that's where you get a lot of the Bollywood influence in this film, which CJ kind of pointed out. Yeah, it's like a bunch of white people doing a Bollywood number and you're just like, oh, you know, we're only a few years before Jai Ho, in Slumdog Millionaire, a film made by British people starring people from India that won Best Picture, and everyone thinks it's an Indian picture that won Best Picture, but that's not true. The first Indian Oscar just went out this year.
Oh.
Which is crazy. Okay, anyway, Ewan. Let's talk Ewan.
Right?
Yeah. He's so young in this. Like, it's still blowing my mind this movie's over 20 years old now.
I know,
but
right?
I guess that's what every person says that gets to being this age.
No, he has this quality. He is utterly always charming. You always like him and
always.
Follow him.
Yeah.
In everything he does. Like, even in Fargo, where he's playing weirdo assholes, like, I'm like, I'm in. I'm with you. I'm going in the car with you.
Oh, right. What season of Fargo is he on? Is it
I believe three.
I didn't watch that season.
David Thewlis is also in it, and he's.
Right.
Stop it.
French kiss, yeah.
So
but yeah.
Ewan, at this point, he had been a Danny Boyle guy. He had done Trainspotting. He had done.
And what a little of the prequels.
Shallow Grave.
And then he had just done the first Star Wars film.
And Life Less Ordinary, right? Didn't that come
out? Well, Life Less Ordinary, yeah, it's another Danny Boyle movie.
I freaking love that movie.
I think that is one of the worst films I've ever seen. So I would love to talk to you about that.
We need to offline chat about that.
We'll chat about it. But that's another Danny Boyle flick. So yeah, he does a bunch of Danny Boyle flicks and then doesn't get the part in The Beach.
Right.
And he goes to Leo DiCaprio. And so they get in this kind of fight, he and Danny Boyle. Ewan McGregor and Danny Boyle are like not cool for a second. And so then Ewan gets Star Wars and is
hashtag winning.
Incredible. Yeah, right. I think he's phenomenal. I mean, so much so that nostalgia culture has brought him back for a whole
new
it was perfect
saga.
Casting.
Yeah.
Well, and he was the constant in that. He was the one that always got credit for those prequels was
for sure.
Man, Ewan's carrying a load. So yeah.
But so he hasn't shot the second one yet. He starts. In fact, the shooting of Moulin Rouge goes long and has to stop and use a different use a replacement actor for a little bit, a stand-in, because he has to go shoot Attack of the Clones. So that's crazy. Here's another little bit of trivia. Some other people that were considered for this role were. Leonardo DiCaprio.
I would have loved to have heard him belt out Roxanne.
Well, they probably would have had someone else sing.
Yeah.
Which I think is the case for a lot of these people. Because Lerman had obviously worked with DiCaprio for Romeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
But then he auditioned and apparently it just wasn't. They just didn't feel like it was right. And then
I'm not shocked by that.
Yeah.
Heath Ledger was considered.
Ooh.
Okay.
Hugh Jackman.
Mm-hmm.
Jake Gyllenhaal and Ronan Keating was an option.
Jake Gyllenhaal would have been good too.
That would have been interesting. Hugh Jackman, I don't know.
He might have been too young at that time, Jake Gyllenhaal. I feel like now having seen him do George Sunday in the Park, it's like, oh, now he's earned that kind of torture.
That's true, because we're only like 2 or 3 years after Donnie Darko
where he
looks like
young.
A child.
Yeah.
I think you're right. And Hugh Jackman's in kind of an interesting, you know, he's not a name yet. I think X-Men comes out that year, or the year
that
before,
seems about
maybe,
right.
or something like that.
Somewhere around there.
He would have been fine.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, maybe it's just because I know Greatest Showman, but part of me just goes, no, he would have cheesed it so hard, and I wouldn't have liked it. And I, but maybe it's just it's the
well, he's also a singer.
My gift is my song.
That's exactly how.
He's such a song and dance man. It wouldn't have been a good pairing with her like that.
Right.
It was the pairing that does it, and she's
and their chemistry was all kinds of wrong in Australia.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's true.
Right?
That's like, a weird, bad movie.
That movie, yeah. Woof, swing and
I
miss.
Saw that in theaters because I was so excited.
Of
I was
course,
like, the guy
we
who
all
made
were.
Romeo and Juliet and Moulin Rouge has a movie coming out with two of my favorite people at the time,
and it's about an entire continent
and country.
And country.
The Florida
Australia
continent.
Is Australia. That's right. Okay, anyway, so Ewan does great. There's the joke that Natalie and Jay, friends of the pod, always say that Ewan McGregor looks like a Muppet throughout the whole film. I think what they're really getting at is that he is, like, so earnest, and his eyes are so big, and his mouth opens so wide because he's just so happy to be there. But yeah. I'm like, yeah, look at everyone else in the film, too.
There's definitely
all
a Muppet
that.
Aesthetic through
he's
the whole
so,
thing.
He's so talented because he starts off as this bright-eyed, charming, you know, naive male ingenue. And then he just kind of turns into this, like, flirtatious, dipping his toe in the dark pool. And by the end, he's, like, tortured. I mean, the arc he goes through is so well done.
Mm, yeah. I remembered him looking so much worse when they cut to him after the fact, like, writing on his typewriter with the cigarette and the beard. I remembered him looking, like, horrible. And, like,
oh, no, he's still
like,
fine.
Like Christian Bale in The Machinist or whatever, where he just lost all this weight. But no, he just looks totally normal just with a beard.
It's like your girlfriends should die of consumption more often.
That's terrible. But true. And then Kidman. Kidman's at an interesting point because 2 years before she does Eyes Wide Shut comes out. They've shot it for 6 years or whatever. But and she's just left Tom Cruise.
Mm. Yeah.
And
that
Scientology.
Freedom pose outside of the courthouse.
That
I love
meme.
That shot.
Yes, exactly. Very that. So she's in a great time of life. People are loving her. She's always been considered like a sex symbol, but I'm trying to think of things before this where she's like really sexy.
Was Practical Magic before this?
Yes.
Yeah. That was a pretty sexy character.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And now
she's
got the sex pop role of the AMC
a sexy
movie opening.
Yeah, there's nothing sexier than that.
Days of Thunder?
The question
there is the sexy, you know, shower scene and all that in Days of Thunder, but it's with Tom Cruise, so you don't believe it at all.
Right, right. Exactly. So the story goes that she got hurt a lot on this.
That's right. Yeah.
She hurt her knee really badly during a Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend shoot. Mm. Up on the rafters or whatever. You know, she was being lifted up, hurt her knee somehow. And then she also cracked two ribs due
That's
to corset
right.
tightening.
Right. Yeah.
Oof.
And she also got consumption, which
and
was
she
the
got
craziest
consumption.
Actually
right.
got
injury.
It. Yeah, it was insane. So, you know, I guess that's what we do for
art.
What we do for love. What we do for art.
Here's some other potential Satines. Catherine Zeta-Jones was the first person considered.
That makes sense, especially
for that
time. She would have
been too
time.
Burly.
Yeah, she would have, yeah.
Like, too brash.
Mm. Oh, interesting. It just would have been totally different.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
It
would've, for sure.
She would have brought the sort of what she brought to Chicago.
Yeah.
Too, right?
Yeah.
She and Heath Ledger, I guess, read together a lot. That was sort of the big casting they were considering for a long time.
Wow.
Yeah, kind of weird, right? There's an alternate universe of that. Kate Winslet was considered.
Okay.
Sure. She does not sing that well. I'm sorry.
I've
love her
that.
So much, but she has an album out or like a solo song out.
Yeah.
And it's, I just, oh, my heart goes out to her.
Oh,
yeah, that's
just,
okay.
She's
know,
so
I mean,
earnest about it. I love her so much, but that's just tricky.
Renee Zellweger was also considered.
Okay.
Drew Barrymore, Renee Zellweger would have been interesting, much like Roxy. Yeah, I think it would have been interesting. I just don't know that it's...
Yeah, she does such a good job of transforming in a lot of ways that it's just hard to see her...
I think we were all kind of over her at that time, too, a little bit. She was in a lot of stuff back-to-back.
Yeah, that was before her break. When she remember, she took a break for where she was...
Yeah.
That's true. Well, because Jerry Maguire... And Bridget Jones' Diary and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, she's huge. She's, you know, an Oscar player and all these kind of things. And so, yeah, and then she was being called fat constantly. People
ridiculous.
Were saying she was fat. And she was just like, what the fuck?
She's so cute in Jerry Maguire. All her, and in Bridget Jones.
Yeah. Also just a gorgeous, so cute. gorgeous human. Yeah. The other people, some other people consider Drew Barrymore.
That seems
make a lot of sense.
Weird.
That's I mean,
weird.
If I should die this very moment.
She would have been weird, but I get it for the time. She's right before Charlie's Angels, right? Yeah, so like she's in the like sexy Drew Barrymore fit. So I guess I get the idea. Natalie Mendoza, Charlene Spiteri, Sophie Ellis Baxter. But the number one person I don't think makes any sense.
I can't wait.
Margot Martindale.
Character actor Margot Martindale. No,
that would have been awesome.
Actually, that would have been amazing. Was Hilary Swank.
No.
Where's
this $1 million baby?
No.
This is like 4 years before $1 million baby.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
but it's after Boys Don't Cry, right?
It is. It's also after Karate Kid,
which is her sexiest movie.
Wow.
And then Courtney Love auditioned and didn't get the role, but she loved the script so much.
Threatened a lot of people. No, I'm
just kidding. Yeah,
probably.
On her way out.
Yeah, yeah. She loved the script so much that she actually gave Lerman the rights to Smells Like Teen Spirit, which is a very rare case of her allowing Cobain's music to be used. So that's pretty cool that she didn't get the rights and still gave him the thing. However, the story goes that that Marilyn Manson was the one recorded on the movie singing it. And Courtney Love has a notorious feud with Marilyn Manson and was like, and like freaked out. So 6 days before the film was released, they had it recorded by somebody else.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
by like
such
an unknown
a
rock
fun
band.
Fact.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Insane in the
membrane.
Okay. So there's been 1,000 Moulin Rouge films.
Oh God. Yeah.
Specifically there's like 10 of them that are before 1950. There's tons of them. There's, Le Fantôme de Moulin Rouge, which is in 1925.
That's the Phantom of the Moulin Rouge.
Correct.
And it's sort of has nothing to do with any of this. It's about a guy whose body gets pushed out of his soul gets pushed out of his body, and he walks around France or something. I don't really understand. And then there's
it's like there's Ghost Dad, but in France.
That one. It's like Ghost Dad. That one. And then there's a 1928. Film Moulin Rouge. There's a 1934 film Moulin Rouge. There's a 1940 Moulin Rouge. Jeez. And then in 1952 is the very famous John Huston Moulin Rouge. This is the actual fictional account of Toulouse-Lautrec.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why Toulouse-Lautrec is a character in this, because it's an homage to this film. Is putting him in there. It's Zsa Zsa Gabor, Jose Ferrer.
It's a real weird departure for John Huston at that point. Yeah. But it's great because he's just like, but he was ballsy. Like he would be like, forget everything I ever did before. Let me reinvent myself entirely.
And Zsa Zsa is playing the real cabaret performer Jane Avril, who Satine is based on as a character.
Yes.
Oh, okay, cool.
Who was a real person. Toulouse-Lautrec was a real person. So there's, you know, we're circling around real things in this film, but obviously it's not.
It didn't actually happen.
Right.
It's very much of its time and place. Like, he's sampling. Like, he's taking a lot of legitimate, like, structural hip-hop stuff.
Yeah.
And editing stuff that we've seen creep into film in the 90s. Oliver Stone kind of did it. But Baz finds this balance with it. those fast cuts and the, certainly the music itself, but also just the images and the speed ups and the slowdown and the whipping heads. And it just was amazing.
But I only felt like in those two movies it worked. In Romeo and Juliet and Moulin Rouge, I felt like every time he tried to do it in his other movies, it was too chaotic and didn't fit in with
I agree.
The romance.
Which is why Gatsby and Elvis, to me, just fully don't work. Because he thinks that's what we want.
Right.
He thinks we want the bombastic in your face. And I'm like, I like that in theory.
That was
like,
so Jim Gaffigan. That's
But... when we were watching it the other day, Scott and CJ and I kept noticing every time they show the what we were calling the rude mechanicals, the sort of Toulouse-Lautrec's crew of writers, right?
The Bohemians.
Artists, the Bohemians, thank you. The Bohemians. Whenever we look at them, the camera is askew. It's like cockeyed. Mm-hmm. It's just like a little bit on an angle. And anytime we're on the lovers, it's very calm. Mm-hmm. And it's unless they're in a big group number, but it's like very calm and very like legato sort of filmmaking, right? In Elvis, he's just like look at his hips and then
it's too much.
And again, and then let's have Tom Hanks stand over a spinning wheel of death, and I'm just like, I don't need this.
I don't know, but Tom Hanks like my favorite actor of all time, and even I watching Elvis was like, he does not belong in this movie.
Worst thing ever.
It just doesn't, and his character doesn't belong in that movie. It just was all kinds of wrong.
You know, and it's the initial inspiration was, let's write a story about that guy's relationship with Elvis. Mm-hmm. And then it sort of went away from that. And they're like, let's make an Elvis thing. Let's just make an Elvis thing. And then they cast Tom Hanks. And they went, oh, well, we have to make him a huge part again.
Just
and so they kind of re-injected all of it.
It's not
and
good.
Then, yeah, it doesn't work. It just doesn't.
And I love him so much. I love him so much.
He's in the new Wes Anderson movie, by the way.
That's
true. I already pre-ordered my tickets.
It's called Asteroids.
Asteroid City.
Asteroid City. That's right.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Asteroid.
I stepped on you there.
Oh, it was just me bitching about Elvis more about, and then let's just not talk about major problems as an individual. Let's leave it out.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with every biopic at this point. I mean, we've beat it to death with Greatest Showman and with all, you know, it's just like, why are we telling the story if we're not going to tell the story?
Yeah.
I don't need an inspirational story about Elvis. Elvis is an inspiration to many, many people. I want to know what happened.
Yeah.
I want to know what the real story is. I want to know about his actual bigotry. They make him this like real hero of race problems in this film. And you're just like, he was not like that.
All of this being said, Butler's performance was phenomenal.
I liked his eyelashes and eyeliner.
It was okay. I think he was just okay.
Interesting. I think it's great. I think the film surrounding it isn't good enough to support it. But I also think it's a Brendan Fraser problem. It's the same problem where he was in The Whale, which is a horrible movie, a terrible script, and directed okay, I guess, but for the most part, bad. And then you have these two phenomenal performances in the middle of it, and it's like, okay, well, it's going to get some Oscars because of that. But
let's
the film itself
Encino
sucks.
Man
dick.
An Oscar. Yeah.
Encino Man does deserve an Oscar.
It does. His range in that movie. Talk about an arc. Sure.
Yeah. Did you guys
from
happen to
ice
hear...
to ice skating?
Show me another one who's done it. Show me.
Did you guys see the whole pot? You know the what's his name? Jimmy Kimmel made a joke about Pauly Shore
at the Oscars.
Not being at the Oscars because Ke-Huy Quan and Brendan Fraser were both in Encino Man and all that. And Pauly Shore was like, you can make fun of me all you want. I'm proud as shit of my two brothers and winning their fucking Oscars. Like, he was just like, judoed it. He was just like, I'm so proud, so thrilled. Yeah. It was just really cool. It was heartwarming.
Somebody give Pauly Shore an Oscar.
No.
Absolutely not.
Please don't give him any more of a platform.
Let's give him jury duty.
Biodome.
For In the Army Now. Let's give him. Jesus. I was a really big Pauly Shore kid, though.
How could you not?
I have all of them on DVD. I have Encino Man. I have Biodome. I was a big Pauly Shore kid. Son-in-Law.
Oh my God, Son-in-Law. That's the one.
Son-in-Law is actually a halfway decent flick, though.
Yes. A classique.
I wouldn't call it a classique, but a halfway decent
film. A classique.
That means classic.
Also, classic. He's in a Goofy movie. Pauly Shore is in a Goofy movie as the friend, the stoner friend.
Yeah.
He makes the Leaning Tower of Cheese Whiz.
Okay. I remember.
Kind of coded as a stoner, though. It's really funny. Anyway, so this cost $50 million to make in 2001. Adjusted, I'm sure, it's maybe like $100 million, but it's, you know, probably. That's kind of weirdly cheap for how big this movie is, I feel like, $50 million. It makes $180 million at the box office. Huge film.
Wow.
Huge DVD seller as well. I bought this DVD pretty early. And
CD, the soundtrack itself.
Oh, the soundtrack. I still listen to that
summer of TRL, it was nothing but four ladies.
Yeah. We covered Labyrinth. Of course. That song is huge.
Lady Marmalade.
What
it's called? Is that the name of the song?
It is. Which is already... It's sampling another song. Okay, we're gonna
Gitchy.
That one. It gets 8 nominations at the Oscars, including Best Picture. I believe this is still when they were only doing 5.
That's right.
Picks.
Yeah,
so that's
the
pretty,
good old days.
The big deal. Yeah. Where you're not getting things like Top Gun Maverick up in the top.
Right.
It's 8 nominations. It wins production design and costume, which makes sense.
Absolutely.
Can anyone tell me what won Best Picture that year, 2001, the 74th Academy Awards?
Was it Shakespeare in Love?
It's not. That's 1999. Yeah.
Which was another good year for film.
Was it Gladiator?
Close. You're very close. The actor is correct.
Oh, the
Beautiful
actor.
Mind.
It's Beautiful Mind.
Oh,
a Beautiful
was that
Mind.
That long ago?
Yeah. Starring Russell Crowe and
Jennifer Connelly.
Connelly from
of Labyrinth.
Labyrinth
fame, yes.
And Paul Bettany.
I love Paul Bettany.
Same year as Fellowship of the Ring.
Oof.
Oh, yeah,
that year.
Right.
So Beautiful Mind and Fellowship pretty much take all the Oscars that year.
When did Gladiator win? I thought that was 2001
2000?
Wow. It might have been 2000.
Yeah,
let me check.
Check on that.
But a shout out to Paul Bettany in the movie Wimbledon, one of my favorite rom-coms of all. Hey, we're going to have a lot to talk about Bailey offline. I did not like that expression.
Wimbledon bad. And I'm a Kirsten Dunst. Like,
Wimbledon good. Damn. We will talk about it later. I'm furious right now.
She's picking her nails.
You're semi correct, CJ. It came out in 2000 and it won the Oscar in 2001 for the 2000 Oscars.
Right.
Moulin Rouge and A Beautiful Mind is the next year.
Okay.
So
I love Gladiator.
Russell Crowe's on a pretty big high.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
And then gets a big low later.
Oh,
in what? He's never had a bad movie.
Do you hear the people singing the
in
song?
His top 3 performances. All right, so did any of you see the stage show?
I did.
No, and I'll go on my rant real quick about not wanting to.
Sure.
It's not because I dislike the aesthetic. I don't want to hear this as a Broadway show. The magic of it to me was that the not singing well, that we don't have big voices doing it. That created intimacy and an energy that I don't know if I want to see on there. But I would love to hear what you guys who did see it thought of that.
I thought it was enough of an adaptation that made it work on stage. When I went to go see it, I wasn't expecting much. I was kind of expecting it to be a ball of crap. But I was surprised by how much I actually enjoyed it and really felt like it was different enough from the movie that it worked on stage. Of course there were ridiculous moments. Of course there were moments where I went, oh my God. But right. Overall, I just really liked some of the song choices, that a lot more, you know, fun modern songs being used, you know, during the time. I just thought it was great. I had a great time.
All right.
Yeah, I think that's most people's opinion of it. I think it's very populist. It's very of the time. Because if the original film is MTV generation music, right? Sure. The stage show is very now. And, you know, you have Sia's Hanging from the Chandelier song. Or I Wanna Swing from the Chandelier. That's like, and things like that. And you're kind of like, okay. And you have Katy Perry. That's probably the worst part of the whole show, is at one point Satine comes out and she goes, do you ever feel like a plastic bag?
Yeah, stuff
bag?
Like
and
that
like,
is
stop, stop.
But I have to do, I have to say that even with those moments, like after you get through the initial like, oh God, roll of the eyes, you just kind of get into it with everybody else.
I had a very different experience. So my experience was that I got there knowing I was going to hate the crap out of this. Like I just knew, I was like, I know this is going to be bad. But I sort of gave in to, like, I'm here for the spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave me spectacle. Spectacles, testicles, wallet, and watch. It was huge. And it's every time the curtain opens again, it's a whole new set.
Yeah.
And it's a huge set. It's like for a cafe, they've built the whole alley of France. And you're just like, what? I'm in Paris. And the elephant's head is on stage and the windmill is on stage. And it's like... it's epic. And the first thing that happens is they introduce and they say, please put away your phones and do all these things and don't take off your mask. And then it goes real low bass. Dook, dook, and the curtain starts to rise and you're like, oh. And you get chills and you're like, this rules. And then the first number is Lady Marmalade. Mm. And it's four women dressed like the women from the music video. And they rap and they do the whole thing. And you're just like, everyone's on their feet. And it's Hollywood. We're at the Pantages. So everyone's, you know... going nuts, drunk, out of their minds. It's a full house. It's, you know, late night, Saturday night on Hollywood Boulevard. About a block from where you saw the movie, Scott, from the Grauman's Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Man's Chinese. So then the Christian comes out and his frat brothers are there. And the reason I know this is because they start chanting the name of the frat and his real name. And every time he comes on stage, he breaks because they scream at him. Every time. Okay.
So
anytime
messed
he
up.
Has an intimate moment, they start going, oh, and he kind of breaks a little bit. Okay.
You couldn't
the audience
even enjoy
loves it.
It.
The audience, no, the audience
oh,
lives
audience.
For it.
Oh, audience.
Well,
because
LA doesn't know how to watch theater. So they're all watching and they're laughing at every time he breaks. It makes the show 20 times longer because it adds minutes and minutes because we're just sitting there while he breaks and then they laugh and then he breaks again and they laugh and they. Okay. That aside, every time another song came on, I just got disappointed because it was never the song I wanted it to be. I always wanted it to be the one from the movie. And mm-hmm. I think. I'm just one of those people. I'm just like, I'm kind of like, just put the thing I like on stage. I want to see the spectacle of the thing I already like. And they're sort of like, no, it's for new audiences, which I appreciate. And like, Pam, I think it worked for you. I think it works for most people. For me, truly, it just was like constant blue balls. Like, I'm like, okay, well, at least they got to do Diamonds. Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. And they don't. They do Diamonds Are Forever.
Well, it's like sometimes I think it works and it doesn't. Like Beetlejuice, I wanted the film on stage and it was not the film. And I left kind of disappointed. But with Moulin Rouge, I actually liked that it wasn't the film because I felt like if they had tried to do the film, it would have failed.
Mm. I agree with you. Mm. But so here's the other side of this. Mm. The successful part of this is I think the book is good. I think Toulouse-Lautrec is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
In
huge
the musical.
Upgrade, yeah.
He's a much better part. He has so much more to do with Christian. He's like Christian's like
guru.
Very godmother guru thing. Yeah, and it rules. And the guy who played him on the tour was incredible. And the book is a lot cleaner. Everything's kind of out of order. So I appreciated that. It was the songs that I kept just going, ugh. But the Elephant Love Medley is already so good. Why write a whole new medley? It's I already I like the medley.
Is the elephant medley good, or did we just memorize it and are nostalgic about it from its time?
I think it's really clever and drives a narrative in a way that watching it the other night, I hadn't watched it in a little while, and was just like, whoa, this is really, really clever.
That was something that didn't age well for me when I saw it again as an adult. Wow. I don't know why.
Interesting.
I have a question for you two that saw the show. One of my favorite parts about the movie are the super quiet moments where it's just one, and it happens with you and a Nicole a lot, where it's zoomed in on their face and it's them just singing by themselves. Was the stage thing all Hazarai, or were they able to like turn it down and have those really intimate moments on stage?
I would say sometimes, but it was so much better in the movie because we were so close to them. You know, we were watching the
obviously
the
that's
emotion.
Hard in the Pantages.
Yeah, they definitely did take it. It wasn't all a spectacle, you know, the whole entire time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say it was better executed on film.
My big note was that when it did get intimate, it was too quick. Mm. It was like they would do an intimate moment for like a second, and I'd be like, oh, are we pausing? And then they would just go back into a big thing. And I was like, oh, man, can you hold that a little longer?
Yeah.
And that might have just been directorial, actually.
It gives you a nice little break, too, from all of the spectacle, for sure. Yeah.
But no, it was pretty much just screaming at you the whole time. But there was the big thing, and this goes back to what Scott sort of brought up. The biggest problem I actually have with the show is that they cast a bunch of musical theater Broadway performers who are hyper talented at singing musical theater on Broadway. In the tour, it was the woman who had originated Jasmine and Aladdin on Broadway was playing Satine. Okay.
Oh, wow.
So I know she has a phenomenal Disney pop Broadway voice. I know she has that. So then all of a sudden when she's singing Katy Perry,
it's not,
and I'm like, ooh,
right.
this is bad.
Yeah.
It sounded bad.
Yeah.
And like the Christian had an okay voice, but it was so poppy that I was like, this is how you have to do it or you can't really do it.
Yeah.
You know? And like, I just kept being taken out by the songs. The songs didn't work for me, but the spectacle, the book was interesting. That all sort of worked for me.
But
and
you
it's
know
not
what?
Even,
the songs worked. The rock, pop, whatever, radio songs worked for the characters that weren't Christian and Satine.
I agree with that. They worked
for the side kooky characters because
right.
they got to even, use their, you know.
That's right. The Duke even sang, I think, a song. I can't remember what it
I
was now,
remember,
but it was
but
good.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, oh. Duke is like a whole different character also. He's scarier, but you kind of see his side of it a little bit more in the show.
Whereas he's
more
like Snidely Whiplash in the movie.
Exactly.
Yeah, where he's just so this in the movie, I'm going to kill you. And
he's more human on the stage.
He is, and I don't. It might have just been a you know the performer, but he was just this like kind of presence of a man, and I kind of wanted to kiss him.
Oh,
all right. He was cute.
All right.
What are your favorite songs? And then we should do our ending stuff. What are your like favorite songs in the film?
My favorite song and dance sequence for sure is Roxanne. I also love your song and Come What May. They're all really lovely.
So Come What May is interesting because it was actually written for Romeo plus Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Just as a song that I think someone was going to sing at one point in it. I think
Desiree.
I'm glad they didn't. that Desiree song at the ball is so great.
Yeah, someone was, I don't remember what it was, but they ended up scrapping it. And then when they were working on this, they were like, well, he needs to come up with an actually new song. It shouldn't be something everybody knows because it's like something he's inspired to write in the moment about her. And so they used Come What May and it works. It's a great
song. Is that in the live musical?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, good.
They keep
good.
That. They keep that, and they keep, you know, I mean, they keep the...
They just do it differently. Like, they do Roxanne differently. It was great. They go from the Green Fairy scene into Roxanne, and it was really, really well done and very different from the film.
And it's only Christian's song.
Yeah.
There's tangos around her, but there's the Spaniard, as they call it, isn't... Or the Argentinian. I apologize. The Argentinian with narcolepsy. is a smaller part, but he's like a big dance part, and he and the Zidler role sort of run the night. They're kind of your MCs of the night.
Okay.
Zidler was bad in the show that I saw.
Oh, no.
But it was just the performing.
Honestly, I don't even remember him. That's probably how bad he was. Yeah. I don't even remember him.
That's bad news. What else?
Oh, the songs. So my favorite song was one that I recorded on my tape recorder when I would go to see it in the movie theater because it wasn't on the soundtrack. And it's Nicole Kidman going, "If I should die this very moment, I wouldn't fear, for I've never known completeness like being here." Ugh.
Nice.
I don't remember that. When is that?
It's when she's super sad about her life. It's just like a really beautiful song she sings in the darkness. I think it's when it might be around the time when she's going to like pretend that she's never been in love with him. I think it's like around that
yeah, it's
thing,
like right before. Yeah.
It's so, oh my God. I remember watching that in the theater and just every hair on my, you know, the back of my neck just stood up.
I really love her performance of Someday I'll Fly Away.
Mm.
I think it's beautiful.
I always fast forward that song.
Wow. I think that's the only song I got goosebumps during while we were rewatching it, where I was just like, but I see that. I mean, yeah, when I'm normally watching most movies like that, yeah, that's an easy skip, I guess. But when
like,
watching
cheer
it
up,
the other
Charlie.
Day,
just fast forward.
Actually, I can't believe you just said
I
that.
I know.
I got in a huge argument with somebody about that the other day.
No.
That's my favorite song in that movie.
All right, we have a fight dinner coming up because like three things.
No, seriously. I cannot comprehend. I get it. Like, it's the boring. It's the woman singing the sad song. Every time I watch that movie, that song, I bawl my eyes out through the entire song.
It might hit you differently. Like, for some reason, just...
I guess.
Connect with it differently, yeah.
Every time, it was on TikTok or something, somebody posted, like, songs you skip when you watch good movies.
So angry.
And I was like, first of all, I don't skip things in movies usually anyway, but because they'll get mad at me, I feel like.
The movie will get upset.
Yeah.
Yes.
But so I don't skip things anyway, but I skip things on soundtracks. But when it comes to that, they were like, yeah, this is the ultimate skip song. And I was like, this is the ultimate track on this soundtrack. Like, I want to fisticuffs with you now. We're going to fight.
Mom and dad are fighting.
I can't wait, though. I'm actually excited about the fight.
Yeah, me too. It'll be fun. Here's a IMDb trivia.
Oh, wait, Scott, what was your favorite song?
No, I don't care. I don't care.
Such a jerk.
Scott, what's your favorite song?
No, I'm going to split. I'll talk to y'all later. Bye.
Bye.
I love Like a Virgin. I love the two of them.
It's so fun.
And I remember seeing it the first time and it just surprising the hell out of everybody in the audience.
Yeah.
Like we were prepped for it, but then he pulled out Like a Virgin of all things and to play it that way, it's just great. And of course I love the love melody.
Yeah. So the
medley,
Like
love
a Virgin medley. Took a week to
Did
film.
Did I say melody?
Like a Virgin scene took a week to film.
Oh, wow.
And Richard Roxburgh says that's like his favorite time in the whole shoot.
They look
so
like
fun.
They're having a blast.
I also read a bit of trivia that they had to coke the floor so it was sticky.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, theater kid stuff.
Right? Totally.
Have y'all ever had to do a show where they did that?
Yep.
I've coked the bottom of my shoes before, the bottom of my character shoes.
Can you guys explain what that is?
It's literally taking
cocaine and putting
it
on the
cocaine.
Yes. Oh my God, this is the most expensive floor in town. You literally
so when you're on a stage, it's extremely slippery for especially taps. When you're wearing tap shoes or any type of dance shoe that has like a slippery bottom that without grip, ballet, anything like that, then they will take a mop bucket and put Coca-Cola.
Oh
sugar.
My God.
It has to have sugar. If it doesn't have sugar, it won't work. It's the sugar that works. And you put it all over the stage. I had to do it for Billy Elliot in Alaska.
It doesn't make it too sticky?
Well, you have to find the balance. You
have to put it on a couple days before, and you got to get some traffic on there to.
Oh,
jeez.
It helps with tap, especially because when we were doing Billy Elliot in Alaska, people were sliding into the pit. Not literally, but they were sliding towards the pit because there was a rake to the stage. So we had to do it because people were just sliding all over the place. But it's good. It just keeps you from slipping a little bit. It's just an old theater trick.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of cocaine on the stage.
A little cocaine on the stage and backstage.
Yeah, Elephant Love Medley is probably the one that I love the most. The other song I really love is the opener. There was a boy.
Oh, yeah. So good. Yeah.
That
There's
is really nice.
A David Bowie soundtrack version of it that I think is phenomenal.
Oh yeah, when they released that second album, yes.
Because
yeah,
that's really good. That's a Bowie cover of Nat King Cole, right?
Right. And then U2 does their Children of the Revolution on.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
But no one likes U2, Scott. It's fine. No one likes U2. All right. You don't have to apologize.
Oh, God. Bono.
Some IMDb trivia, because we love it. I got two here. There's a lot. People add some crazy batshit stuff to these IMDb trivias, but we're going to throw one down. One of them is that the Green Fairy in the absinthe scene. Have y'all ever drank absinthe?
Oh, yeah.
Not real absinthe.
Yes.
Yeah. Have you had wormwood absinthe, Pam?
No.
Like trippy absinthe?
Oh, no. Okay.
I did in when I was 18 in Italy, and it was a lot. It's a story for another time. But there was apparently the fairy was supposed to be a long-haired muscle man with a giant sitar, and Ozzy Osbourne was the vocals.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay.
No one cares. You're all like, great. but eventually it was changed to the current Tinkerbell incarnation with Kylie Minogue.
Kylie Minogue as her.
But Osborne is still the voice when the fairy turns into that like evil guttural fairy.
Oh,
still Ozzy Osbourne.
That's rad. Okay.
Kind of fun.
I didn't like that the sateen in the stage play played the Green Fairy. I wanted it to be someone else.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. When the Green Fairy happens, which is like beginning of Act 2, which is really late in the script. I remember thinking, another thing about the show is I remember thinking we ended Act 1 and I was like, how are they going to do the rest of the plot? Yeah. They had only gotten to like...
The elephant medley ends Act 1.
Yeah, or something like that. And we were like, oh, there's so much more plot.
Wow. Wow.
So weird. Yeah. Oh, also, the only other original song written for the movie is that the Spectacular Spectacular.
I love that song.
That's not in the stage show either. They write a whole new song, and it's like a Broadway musical theater song all of a sudden. It's so out of place.
I actually agree. It was super out of place. They should have kept Spectacular, for sure.
Especially because it was original, so it's like, why not?
Yeah.
The only other IMDb thing that I thought was interesting is that they say the word love 143 times in this film.
Right. Wow.
Well, truth, and beauty, exist. Freedom, and love. Yeah.
Right. And 143 is sort of the symbol for I love you, because it's I is one letter, love is four letters, and you is three letters. So it's like
weird. Oh my God.
IMDb for your brains. Fucking A. Okay. What else do we need to do? You have anything else you want to say about Moulin Rouge exclamation point?
No, I want to do a big shout out to all those supporting cast, though. It was extraordinary.
I watched Broadbent and Leguizamo.
Leguizamo.
Yeah. And Roxburgh, too. Like, Roxburgh was just great
so
in
good,
it. I wish
he
would do more, but and then what's his name? Jacek Coleman? As the unconscious Argentinian is
so
just doing Roxanne. It's just such a great little fucking part of that movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and just the cast of characters behind, like every single dancer has their own sort of character that they've developed.
And style.
You know, the rehearsals for that were so fun. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, and we were talking, and I may have mentioned it earlier in the episode, but just... that it was so great to see theater people be able to turn on theater. Like, Broadbent is just, like, blowing the lens off the camera because he's, you know, being able to
add an 11,
stuff.
Yeah.
Add an 11. So, yeah, I just loved it.
We never did catch where David Wenham was in the film. He's Faramir in the Lord of the Rings movies.
Oh, yeah.
But I never saw his face.
Yeah, but he is credited in it.
As, like, one of the... I mean, he's, like, 10th build. His name is Audrey.
Well, if you think about it...
Oh, Audrey is in the beginning. He's the writer who quits, and then Christian comes and takes over. He's the one who
shit, it is him.
Yeah. Oh,
there we go.
Whoa, they styled him so differently.
Yeah, and he's very good. He's really over the top. And then he's
And he
out.
Has like the little bob wig.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And this is before Amazing. He was Faramir.
Yeah, this is pre-Faramir.
Well, yeah.
I can't believe
before.
I knew who you were talking about just by his character name.
respect, Pam. Absolute respect.
Wow.
That's
now
why
I
it's
see
my
it.
Pick.
Now I totally see it, Pam. Wow.
Yeah.
Holy crap. Okay. Yeah, because he's got makeup and everything. Okay. Pam, final word. Theater. Final word on Moulin Rouge.
So fun. And nostalgic, and it's aged well. It'll all always be one of those movies that you can just watch, you know, again in 10 years and just enjoy the crap out of it. That's all.
Yeah. Okay, what do we need to do? Spotlight some LA theater?
Let's do it.
Spit lit.
LA Spotlight.
See, you got stuff?
I've got one. The Thin Place by Lucas Hanaf at Echo Theater Company. Friday, Saturday, and Mondays at 8. Sundays at 4.
Have you all ever seen anything at Echo at that space?
Yes.
I have.
Cool little space.
Yeah,
cool little space.
Absolutely.
EchoTheaterCompany.com. And that's Echo Theater Company on Instagram as well. And it's ER in the theater.
Awesome. I just want to give a shout out because this doesn't have too much longer and it's been getting great buzz. I don't know if I'm going to get to it or not, but Twilight Los Angeles at the Mark Taper. Check out centertheatergroup.org for more information. It's running through April 9th through Easter Sunday. And then a shout out to a show that just opened recently, Mutant Olive 2.0. is playing at the Hudson Guild Theater. Check out the hudsonguildtheater.org for more information. It's running through April 11th. And then starting in a week, there's a production of Hedda Gabler that's going to be happening at the Broadwater Black Box. And I'm kind of interested. I'll get more details for next episode.
I can only think of Tennessee Williams every time we talk about Hedda Gabler.
Poor woman.
Right. I don't have anything, but Pam, do you have anything you want to shout out?
Oh, well, no. My campaign on Seed and Spark just ended today. It ends tonight, and we made over $15,000 for our little pitch video for Casper and Pam that we're going to make for our
Yay!
TV show.
That's fucking great.
And
fucking
Pam, you have amazing. A show at Fringe this You have two shows at Fringe this
two
year.
Two shows. One is directed by yours truly, Bailey Burcham.
Your
Jay Bailey Burcham. And I just had a ton of alcohol in the last 3 seconds. and then the other show is a comedy play that I wrote that's like an hour long about social media and losing yourself in social media.
Awesome.
Right on. Sweet.
I'll be there.
Yay.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us for part 3 of 4 of original movie musicals. Next week, we will be covering Rocket Man 2017?
Yeah, it was 2018 or 2019. It was 2019? Like right before the 2020? Quarantine. After, 2019?
Like, You're right. A phenomenal film that I'm excited to watch with the three of you. We're going to be doing a watch party this weekend, and then we'll upload that shit.
Probably with some Lucifer's pizza.
Oh.
Wait.
Oh, no, wait.
We'll
going to Pam's.
I was like, I don't think they deliver to me. I'm so sorry.
But we'll get something dank and we'll have a good time. It'll
actually,
be
I was going to make a big pot of chili for you guys.
Nice.
I'm kidding. No, that sounds amazing. CJ?
Yes. Oh, hey, do y'all have questions or comments? You can reach out to us via email, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Scott?
Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. Our theme song is better than your theme song. I'm
Bitch.
Saying it. There you go. He also writes all of our stingers, and he's an amazing human being. And finally, to the great award-winning playwright Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it. One day, Carol Churchill, we're going to buy you a beer or whatever kind of cocktail you enjoy.
Yeah,
and just a shout out to Annie Baker, who used to write our podcast.
That's old school. That's old news.
Yeah, sorry, Annie. We appreciate y'all. Subscribe, rate, review. It really does help. And we'll see you next time. Write in questions.
Please.
Not just Austin Almond. Everybody else, too. Please.
Yes.
We love you, Austin, but like, holy crap.
Here it comes.
Enchanted evening, you may see a stranger. You may see a stranger across a crowded room. And somehow you know, even then, that somehow you'll see her again and again.
Later, everybody.
The theater, the theater.
Hang out, Louie!
Theater, theater.
Mr. Mina here.
Real name.